Borca.
No.
Huh?
No, Borca, no.
Welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
Just a couple of Muslim women making a bunch of people uncomfortable and then laughing about it.
This is Taz.
And this is Zareth.
No Borca, no.
Hello.
Hi, Zara.
Hey.
How's it going? Welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast.
I am feeling immortal today.
Immortal? Why so?
I'm just walking around feeling that confident, immortal, undefeated. It's a good feeling.
Undefeated. What are we talking about today?
We got a lot going on.
I feel like Muslims have really been in the news in the past month. I think last month we were kind of struggling about what to talk about. And it was like the week after the podcast came out, there was so much to talk about.
Which we should point out was also a week after September 11th.
Right. Of course. We'll be talking about I Stand With Ahmed. We'll be talking about those I'm Muslim videos. We have a couple of really interesting, awkward experiences that happened. We're going to be talking about Janet Jackson. It's going to be exciting.
Janet Jackson.
But you had an amazing show recently, right? The Dartmouth show that you've been pitching for like 10 months finally happened.
Yeah. I just recently performed my one-person show, All Atheists Are Muslim, at Dartmouth College. I was super nervous because everyone said it's like white male Republicanville.
Yeah.
Which is funny because then apparently a lot of the students there assumed that I was some anti-Islamic performer.
Really?
Yeah.
And then they went to the show and they were like, oh.
Totes. They learned lots. It was transformative. I fixed a lot of people.
Oh, that's good. You're doing it for the cause.
The creeping Sharia cause, I'm going to be clear. In our attempt to expand the Muslim world into a Muslim planet, I have done my duty.
On behalf of all Muslims, I thank you.
You're welcome. I feel like we need a sound effect after that. On behalf of all Muslims, I thank you. More about my Dartmouth experience. Plenty of awkward Ask a Muslim moments. And also like really transformative moments in our awkward Ask a Muslim segment.
As always.
As always. Taz, you met like a major Muslim speaker last night.
Yeah, I actually didn't get to meet her because it was so crowded. But I saw Mona El Tahawi, the Egyptian Muslim feminist activist. I wasn't sure what to expect when I walked in, but I was super impressed by her. She has a book that just came out called Hijabis and Hymen about the sexual revolution in the Middle East. And I mean, like, I felt like a lot of her book talk reflected a lot of the themes that we talk about in our podcast, just this diversity of Muslims in the community and how women are treated in Islam and in Muslim culture in the Middle East. It's just really fascinating.
How are Muslim women treated?
Well, you'll just have to read the book and find out. I don't want to speak on behalf of all Muslims, but the book's called Hijabis and Hymen, so it's out right now, so you can go check it out.
Was there like a line from her speech that just like really stuck with you?
One of the things that she was talking about was how as a Muslim community, we're in alliance with other movements and how we need to build solidarity and community. And that really resonated with me because I think that's a lot of the social justice type conversations we're having on our podcast. So that was great.
That is very cool.
Yeah. I wanted to move on to talk about I Stand With Ahmed, which was something that happened as soon as we recorded our last podcast. So we weren't able to talk about it. It was about this 14-year-old kid named Ahmed Mohammed down in Irving, Texas, who brought a homemade clock to his school and he got detained for it. And he was only 14. And it was really, really ridiculous. It took social media by storm. The hashtag I Stand With Ahmed went viral. And it was really impressive to see how this campaign took off. Zara, what did you think when you saw this all happening?
Something that really stuck with me was that it was his father made it so that we could find out about this.
Yeah.
That it was his father who really stood up for him, made sure that the right people were contacted. Because otherwise, stuff like this could happen anywhere and could be happening anywhere all of the time.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I was like, if when you're a kid and things like this happen on your campus, I mean, we don't hear about bullying cases all the time because it's so often heard. And I think Anil Dash had a lot to do with it, honestly, because he was the one who like shared his Ahmed's photo on social media. And I guess the dad must have contacted him. And I think it was that uplifting of that narrative that really pushed this campaign to take flight.
I don't know Mr. Dash. Who is he? I want to send him a thank you.
He's a well-known tech tweeter.
The bullying that you were talking about.
Yeah.
It reminded me of this talk that I had with the MSA at Dartmouth.
So MSA is the Muslim Student Association for...
Thank you. It's the Muslim Student Association. They call themselves Al-Nur. That was the best thing ever. They talk about how each of them there practices really differently, and they all come from really different backgrounds, different ethnicities, and some of them different sects of Islam, some of them converts, some of them not sure where they stand with their religion, some of them very devout and practicing. And each of them went around and kind of talked a little bit about, you know, their background. And then naturally, it turned into this huge, awesome vent session.
Oh, cool. When you're younger, it resonates so much.
Exactly. And they had so much to say, and they had so many horrendous experiences that sounded so isolating. All of them, you know, were like the only Muslim kid at school.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the girls there was telling me about being Palestinian Muslim in the Midwest. And she was a hijabi. And she was telling me about how, like, when she walked into her classroom in high school, this one kid yelled, "There's a terrorist, everybody duck." And everybody did. And that every single day, at least 3 times a week, her neighbors were contacting the FBI, you know, saying that they were harboring a terrorist. They were harboring someone that looked like a terrorist, and that it was happening so often and always like the same time of the year, to the extent that by year 3, her mom actually set up tea and cookies for the FBI and just like invited them in and was like, "Hey, you're here every year at the same time. Come on in."
So ridiculous.
And it was just so like, this is everyday life. It wasn't surprising to her. And then she mentioned that she just started wearing the hijab a couple of months ago. So then I was like, whoa, 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 wait, wait, wait. So then all of this that you guys were receiving wasn't because you guys were wearing any headdress that like grabbed everybody's attention. You were just brown. You were just like vaguely ethnic looking, and you had Muslim sounding names, and that's all it takes.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not like that surprised by it. So I think one of the things that Sarah Harvard has a blog that was out in Bitch Media this week about how when it comes to, you know, talking about Muslim women, Mona talks about this in her book. Also, she was mentioning it the book talk. It's like so often, like, people look at Muslim women and think that all of their issues need to revolve around the hijab. I mean, in Sarah's piece, she opens up with how her white friend, who was learning about Arabic and Islam through Sarah, was approached by the FBI. And I think both narratives have this kind of theme that, like, when people think about Muslim women, that, like, it's always about the hijab, when really, like, there's so many other issues going on with, you know, Muslim women. Like, these are the things that we need to talk about. We need to talk about how people are hated on and racially profiled and surveilled in this very deliberate and tragic way that incites fear in the Muslim community constantly, whether you're Muslim or whether you're brown.
See, and that's the thing that grabs me. I continue to be surprised by how internalized my sense of Islamophobia is, because I forget that there's a thing called racism that happens that Black people have been dealing with for years and years and years. And it isn't necessarily just because you're Muslim.
Oh my gosh, I can't forget about racism. I think about racism every minute of every day. Like, that's the topic that I wake up thinking about, and that's the topic that I go to sleep thinking about. Like, I never forget it because it's constantly on my mind.
Growing up Persian, the narrative around me in the Persian community that I grew up amongst was always, we're white, we're white, we're white, we're white, but just bad at it. We're just not as good at being white as other people. We're figuring out Christmas.
Yeah, and I definitely did not grow up with that.
Yeah, and I think it was a huge disservice, because then there were all these ways that I didn't realize that what I was going through were these like microaggressions.
Yeah.
It left me feeling like everything was my fault, that I was always doing something wrong.
Yeah. Well, you're not.
And that gets me to Ahmed, because I thought it was so lovely that the president of the United States reached out and was like, "Hey, buddy, it's not you. It's them. You're awesome. Come to the White House."
And I'm still going to drop drones and observe your life with countering violent extremism programs.
Wow.
That was my issue with the Obama tweet, just because the White House has this countering violent extremism program, which is super problematic. which was, you know, like what happened with Ahmed was kind of tied back to that. It was people in the community ratting him out, and that's kind of what the CBE program is all about. So speaking of all these Muslim youth, I wanted to talk about this video that some Muslim young people are creating. They're the I'm Muslim But I videos that BuzzFeed put out. They've been getting millions of views, and they've been getting a lot of traction in the Muslim community. I was pretty impressed by the videos. We'll share the video link on our site. The BuzzFeed video was actually done with a lot of the Muslim community in Los Angeles that I know, and they had things like, I'm Muslim, but I have Jewish friends, or I'm Muslim.
I'm Muslim, but don't be afraid of me. I'm Muslim, but don't be afraid of me. I'm Muslim, but don't be afraid of me.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there was a lot of pushback because it was what Zara was saying was, I'm Muslim, but I'm not scary. But I kind of like saw it the other way. I saw it as like friends who were saying, I'm Muslim, but this is my narrative, and versus I'm Muslim, but I'm trying to make myself safe for white people. And I think that was kind of the conversation that you were seeing on social media around these videos, because some people were seeing these folks saying, I'm Muslim, but I, in a form of assimilation and in a form of appeasement and saying, like, I'm cool and I'm fine. And then there was all these like rebuttal videos. So then there was a rebuttal video about I'm Muslim halal version, which I think implies that the other version was a haram version. But I don't know. I was just getting so annoyed by all these like rebuttal videos because it implies that there's only like one Muslim voice that is allowed to be out there, or one Muslim narrative. And the whole point of having multiple people and multiple faces say these narratives is about having a diverse Muslim community express themselves. It's funny how the rebuttal videos are coming from the UK, and I haven't seen a rebuttal video from the US, and I think the Muslim UK narrative is a lot different than the Muslim American narrative.
I didn't notice the difference between the UK one and the US one. What? How are they distinct? I totally miss that.
The one that really like bothered me in the UK version is there's a woman that says, I'm a Muslim that doesn't need to support feminism to support women's rights.
Oh, yes, that one. Now I remember.
And that just bothered me so much.
What the hell was that about?
Did you also notice how in that video when they like blurred a woman who was wearing hijab and like a little bit of her hair was showing, so then they blurred her forehead?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
That was like so ridiculous. I was like, really? Is it that haram? Is that really going to be that bad?
Hijab Photoshop.
And it was such a bad job of like blurring it out. Anyways, what did you think watching the videos?
It made me cringe because I just thought,
like all of them, or
God,
just like the first one?
All of them, because, well, first of all, let me just say, the one who said, I don't need to be a feminist, just that stands on its own. Like, I want to contact her parents. I want to know what's going on.
Right.
What is happening? We need to reach out to this girl. What's her name? Let's use Facebook's facial recognition software, every tool we have at our disposal to save this woman that says she does not need to be saved in a narrative that's about saving that I'm really conflicted about now. Aside from that one that did a Jedi mind trick on me, they all made me cringe because I was thinking the whole time about audience. And I was thinking the whole time how gross that we are living in a state right now where this is necessary.
Yeah, I guess I see your point there. Like that it's necessary for Muslims to have to feel like they need to say who they are in this kind of a way.
The whole assimilationist thing, I think, is so unfair because I came here for capitalism and I'm here to take your jobs. Like, what the hell is that about? Yeah, I'm here to assimilate. I'm here to fit in, like, and I'm here to do better than you do at it. That's my right. Look out. I've got a CV. It's on LinkedIn. I'm powering through.
You also sent over a Christian video, too, that was up.
Oh, yeah, that cracked me up.
Because I think BuzzFeed is kind of doing this I'm whatever religion and I'm series. So I think in that context, too, it wasn't just about Muslims needing to put their voice out there, but it was like Muslims, Christians. I mean, BuzzFeed usually does series when it comes to things like this. So what did you think about the Christian video?
Yeah, I'm curious to hear people's view on this. I don't know if this is just me, but the whole time that I was listening to the Muslim videos, I was hearing this subtext that was like, I'm Muslim and I'm fine. I'm Muslim and I'm fine. I'm Muslim and I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. And I'm not scary and I'm fine. Look at me. I'm talking. I'm fine. And then the Christian videos were all like, hey, I'm Christian and I'm not going to come after you. Hey, I'm Christian. I'm not going to try to colonize you. Hey, I'm Christian. I've got everything going for me. And I understand that. To me, that subtext existed. Did you get to see the Christian one?
I did. When I was watching the Christian one, it felt a lot different than the Muslim one. Mainly because Christians are the main religion in the U.S.
Right.
Or they're the dominant religion. So it didn't feel as rebellious or radical of a move to have to name your Christianity.
You know what? I just realized what it reminded me of.
What?
Videos of golden retrievers running through fields.
I like how you use the golden retriever as your symbol for a lot of whiteness.
white men are the golden retrievers of the
dog
world. They totally are. I want to play ball. I just want to help. I just want to catch a ball. And I just want a friend. One of each of you. One of you. One of you. One of you. One of you.
All right. Let's go to Election Watch.
We have seen a war on faith.
Is there a Muslim problem in the world?
Absolutely.
I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation.
All right. So elections are right around the corner. And Donald Trump and Ben Carson are causing some major ripples in Muslim elections. I'm getting really angry watching the elections, and I'm really annoyed that I have another 13 months of having to watch stupidity manifest on my television. So the first thing that happened was this unidentified man came up to Donald Trump at this town hall event in Rochester, New Hampshire, and says, we have a problem in this country. It's called Muslims. You know, our current president is one. You know, he's not even an American. And Trump didn't really respond. He just said, we need this question. And he didn't have a firm response to it. And it was so ridiculous that we've had President Obama in office for 8 years. It's not a question if he's Muslim or not, or if he's American or not. He's as American as...
As a president of the United States?
I was going to say he's as American as apple pie, but yeah, he is as American as president of the United
States.
Maybe
we need to see the president eat apple pie first. Maybe he really hasn't passed the test. I mean, it's been 8 years, but...
But...
He's killed a lot of Muslims, but...
I know. And so this has been in the news. Some woman at some event came up to me and was really upset over this comment. And I was just like, it's just Donald Trump. He's going to say stupid things for the next 13 months. I didn't get very mad when I heard it just because it seems so ordinary. considering
that's what scares me.
That it's so ordinary?
Well, that it's so cartoonish that we kind of allow it because it doesn't feel threatening and we don't feel high stakes in it.
Yeah.
At the same time, because it is cartoonish, then it does get past a lot of people and we do kind of just blow it off. But it's inciting a lot of violence.
Yeah. I feel like Donald Trump's kind of the puppet to a very fear-mongering Islamophobic industry that's happening right now. And that I don't think Donald Trump's actually going to win. But I think this is all a part of the process to incite that kind of fear amongst the right wing to get people out to vote. And I think that's what's scary, is that Donald Trump is allowing himself to be used as a tool to do this. Because I think a lot of political rhetoric is about having a good person and a bad person, or having an enemy to all unite against. And I think in this upcoming 13 months that Muslims are going to be that enemy that everyone is trying to unite against. And we see this also with Ben Carson, right? Ben Carson's an African-American neurosurgeon. I can't believe he's a neurosurgeon, honestly, who is running for office. It's just so unbelievable because it just implies that you have to be smart to, get into someone's brain. But then here he is constantly spewing anti-Islamic rhetoric.
You know what? All this tells me is smart people say dumb shit all the time. I mean, people say this with Richard Dawkins, too. But it's Richard Dawkins. Yeah. And he's a racist piece of shit.
Yeah. So the thing that Ben Carson said was, I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. He later clarified what he said and said he would support a Muslim for the White House as long as the candidate rejected the tenets of Sharia law.
Sharia law is like a rapper, right? I'm going to just create, with a notebook and handwriting, a text that says Sharia law and then just put a bunch of rules in it.
I mean, we're joking, but Sharia law is this idea that there are certain rules that you're supposed to follow in society when it comes to Islam. But the idea that you know, in this democratic nation of the U.S., that that is even something to even like fear is ridiculous. I don't even think there are many Muslim countries currently that follow Sharia law to that closeness. It's just absurd.
No, I mean, I didn't even know what Sharia law was until it became a talking point in presidential debates the first go when Obama was running. Anti-Muslim political rhetoric that goes unchecked incites violence. And it just leaves me with this feeling of like, I don't know if I should be scared because it is a ruse. So how emotionally invested in all of this should I be? But I think a lot. I'm going to pull up this Facebook page. Anti-Muslim protests, some armed, planned for at least 20 sites across the country. Oakland's mosque was one of them. And the Facebook pages that are pulling together crew to protest against Muslims are telling their protesters to arm up and that it's open carry.
I mean, we're going to have to expect that this is just the beginning. What they were saying actually was about this protest was that they were trying to do these national rallies because the Million Man March was having their rally out in D.C. So they wanted to do counter protests nationally at sites of where Muslims are. But I think it's just kind of ridiculous how they're trying to tie those two things together. So this is Election Watch. We're going to have to deal with this for another 12 months. So be careful.
Strap in.
It's time for Creeping Sharia
and all the ways we're winning. Creeping Sharia opens with an H&M hijabi model that is taking over the scene in the UK and I guess just H&M's everywhere. Is that how that works? It's a multinational corporation. This is a huge win for Muslims everywhere. I feel a little bit weird about this.
Yeah, why do you feel weird about it? I feel weird about it too.
I'm going to read the quote from the article from FusionNet. Maria Idrisi got a call from a model scout earlier this year asking her to feature in a new ad campaign for H&M. She's 23. She herself was skeptical when they called and said, "Are you sure they know I wear a hijab?" Guess what? That's why they like you.
What I think is really interesting about this is that, like, all of a sudden, we have all these corporations who are looking at to Muslims as a new market to sell to, right? Because they see this potential buying base of people that will buy their stuff. And I know that a lot of Muslim women find it really difficult to find conservative clothes, you know, looser pants, looser jackets, hijab. So in that sense, like, it is a win. There's going to be more chances to buy stuff. But at the same time, it just feels like there's a certain amount of tokenism and a certain amount of capitalism that's associated with being Muslim now, which I'm just so uncomfortable with.
Yeah, the math doesn't add up for me. I mean, this is where I get so confused because I thought that we were winning, right? Like, the Muslim world is huge. We're all bound together. And like, wouldn't that be a market that you would want to sell a lot to? Like, why call Walmart Walmart if Muslims are taking over everything? It should just be Muslim Mart.
I think the thing that bothers me is that there's an element of brownwashing going on. So I think the anti-Gap campaign is something that I was heavily involved with after the Rana Plaza collapse happened in Dhaka in Bangladesh. Like, as soon as that collapse happened, a lot of the clothing that were in Rana Plaza had ties to Gap and other big companies like that. Gap, the company, started using the Sikh American model, Waris Ahluwalia. He wears a turban. So they put a brown turban man at the front of their campaigns in this very like deliberate way, saying like, oh, we're down with brown. And American Apparel did this too when they used the topless model Max for their campaign about 2 years ago, which I actually wrote about and we'll link it to the site. So I think even though H&M didn't do, as far as I know, anything to deserve brownwashing, there's this kind of like tie into that, which makes me feel really uncomfortable.
I still don't really get brownwashing.
Well, I mean, brownwashing is just like a term that I made up where companies
That's awesome.
Use brown people to make themselves more appealable to brown people.
Oh.
I was using it after a term that like environmental groups use, greenwashing, or another term called pinkwashing.
I'm seeing a lot of what you're saying in this quote I'm about to read. The article writes, in reality, Idrisi is anything but shy and conservative and flaunts her faith, face, and talent for henna painting, nail art, and flawless beauty application on Instagram. One of the ways she was discovered by H&M. I think that spells out Creeping Sharia right there. What you got, Taz?
Well, Janet Jackson has an album that just came out called Unbreakable. I hear it's really great. And guess what? Janet Jackson is Muslim.
What?
I mean, remember she married that Qatari man, the billionaire?
Dude, we're totally winning.
Yeah, we're totally winning. I read in this article that she's trying to tone down her show because now, you know, she's a woman of the Quran now. I actually don't know how actual any of this is, but, you know, I believe it. I believe Janet Jackson is Muslim.
I'll take it. I'll take Janet Jackson.
I mean, didn't people talk about Michael Jackson being Muslim for a little bit?
He wore hijab for a while.
We're going to claim Michael Jackson as Muslim now because he wore the niqab for that period of time.
How about we just claim all the Jacksons?
Done. Done. Wonderful Creeping Sharia. So now all these people are going to go see Janet Jackson on tour for her Unbreakable album. And, like, they're not even going to know that they're being, like, Muslimfied. It's going
to
be amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that it's not out more about her converting.
I don't think it's going to help with album sales.
That's why I'm curious about it. I'm wondering if that's on purpose.
Probably is.
I mean, does she need album sales? She just married a Qatari billionaire.
She's an artist, you know? She's doing it for the art. She don't need her man to take care of her. Come on.
I didn't think about that. I hope she starts a Kickstarter. I'm worried about her finances.
It's time for our Good Muslim Award,
where we tell you who the good ones are. Because we can do that.
All right, Zara, who do you want to give a Good Muslim Award to?
Apart from myself?
Yeah, apart from yourself.
I want to give a Good Muslim Award to the Al-Noor MSA community of Dartmouth.
Oh, yeah? Why?
They are badasses. They're creating community out there. And they're asking really important questions, really challenging questions about their faiths as second generationers, as Americans trying to figure out how all this political rhetoric, like assimilationism, ties in with their identity and with their cultural traditions. And that's not small stuff.
Yeah, I think the MSA has become really political in a post 9/11 world because they kind of had to. I also had an interaction with MSA, actually, Zara, while you were in Dartmouth. I was doing a training for MSA West youth down here in Los Angeles, and I had a great time with them, too. I was doing a social media training for them. So I think MSA is doing good work. I agree.
So, Taz, who have you got for the Good Muslim Award?
Yeah, so I don't know, for folks who follow poetry, there is this competition called Brave New Voices that deals with young teenagers who, you know, do spoken word. I'm a poet. I've been doing poetry for a while. I used to do spoken word for a little bit. And there's these two girls who have a piece up called Why Are Muslims So? And it was so amazing to see these two down hijabi women throw down the mic at this poetry slam. Here's a little excerpt.
You know, when we were doing research for this poem, we Googled, why are Muslims so? And here are the top 10 results.
Why are Muslims so crazy?
Those Aladdins.
Why are Muslims so violent?
Those ninjas.
Why are Muslims so angry?
Those towel heads.
So stupid.
Those sand monkeys.
So shallow.
Those ragheads.
So strict.
Those sand kissers.
So barbaric.
Those bin Ladens.
So fanatic.
You Arabs.
So intolerant.
You sand niggers.
Extreme.
Terrorists.
Oh, it's just so stupid because listen, those words mean nothing to me because they don't define me.
No graffiti artist is gonna tell me to go home.
No Call of Duty player is gonna threaten me.
No overprotective bigot of a mother is gonna ruin my day.
No ignorant bystander is gonna leave me feeling left out.
No Tumblr post is gonna scare me away.
And no biased border patrol is gonna stop me from seeing my family.
Because today is one of the holiest days of the year, and instead of spending time with my family,
I'm up on stage defending my family.
That's awesome.
I know, they're like teenagers.
They're badass.
What I love about this is how these two girls really talked about their experiences of, you know, the top 10 things that they were looking up on the internet when it comes to being Muslim. And they like named their microaggressions that they grew up with. And I think when I was their age, I definitely didn't have the ability to understand what I was experiencing. So much props to these two Detroit women.
Yeah, they were so awesome. I loved how they were able to point out everything they were angry about with every community that they were a part of or not a part of, including the fact that the slam was taking place over Eid.
Oh my gosh, I'm so over things taking place over Eid. I missed Eid this year twice because of conferences being held over Eid. It's my biggest pet peeve right now.
I'm curious about, you said that you also grew up not always realizing microaggressions that were coming your way. Like, I always forget that you also had that experience. I have this impression of you as this, like, badass punk who, like, would have totally stood up for me in high school.
I mean, just because you're badass doesn't mean you don't experience microaggressions.
So wise. Awkward, awkward, awkward.
Awkward.
Taz?
Yeah.
Did you feel awkward this week at all?
I did feel awkward. I went on a date with a white guy.
What?
I know. I wrote that article.
Yes, explain.
Yeah. Okay. So I wrote this article about why I don't date white guys. And then I've been trying to put myself out there. So I'm on all these dating app things. And anytime someone on the app said something about, like, oh, I read your article, I was like, oh, they read my article, so they understand my politics. I'll give them a shot. So one of them was a white guy. And you know, he seemed cool. We have a lot of mutual friends that were also cool. So I went out with him. And now I regret it a little bit.
What happened? That was awkward.
Okay, so I don't drink. We went to a tea place, which is fine. And then, like, it was just like an okay date. But, like, he asked me why I don't drink. And I absolutely hate that question. So I avoided answering it, saying, like, oh, I just don't. He's like, oh, is it religious? I was like, you know, it kind of started out, but now it goes beyond just religion. Like, I have a lot of thoughts about why I don't drink. And then he asked me the dreaded question, you know, how Muslim are you? Are you just Muslim culturally or what? Just like, what does that even mean? Like, I didn't know how to answer that, mainly because I think it's kind of a stupid question to answer. And I don't like answering stupid questions.
He asked you, how Muslim are you?
Basically, yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. And I think the thing that really bothered me about that was that, you know, I wrote this article about how I don't like dating white guys because I don't like these uncomfortable questions. And then I ended up going on this date where I had to answer these uncomfortable questions. And it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess. But it was like, like, now I get to say, I told you so. I told you that's why I don't like doing this.
Yep.
But, you know, like, I was open to it. So I think I get props for that, right? Right?
Yeah. You gave it a shot. You gave him a chance.
I gave him a shot.
Don't ask a girl how Muslim she is, because you should just say, are you going to have sex with me tonight?
No, don't say that, because that's not going to work either.
That's what he's thinking.
I just think that, like, no one ever asks Christians on dates, you know, how Christian are you or how Jewish are you, you know? And I think, like, it's a very complicated question to identify as Muslim. I think Zara and I have talked about this before. Like, I kind of think that people can identify as Muslim spiritually, politically, culturally. And, I mean, now in the state of Islamophobia, there's this racialized context also to identifying as Muslim. And it's just so much more complicated. Like, it's, in some ways, I don't even think it's a choice if you can be Muslim or not in this country.
No. Fox News decides.
Fox News. I was going to say Ben Carson decides. Donald Trump decides. Anyways, the whole point of this podcast is to talk about that gray zone that
right.
We're constantly battling. But man, to have to, like, go on these stupid first dates, I might have to quit dating.
I'm going to say two things about that.
All right.
Number one, I reject the idea that anyone needs to identify as either politically, culturally, or spiritually Muslim. I think that that's a tool, a propaganda tool, is to just, like, dissect those from religion, because religion ties all those things together. You can't separate them.
Right.
The second thing I'm going to say is, on behalf of all penises.
You don't have a penis. You can't say that.
Sure I can. I have a, it's not silicone. It's the healthy kind. What is it? Polyurethane? I have one of those in my drawer. So on behalf of all penises, I will say,
it's a vibrator, by the way. It's not an actual penis.
If you don't de-penis my penis. If a girl was to say to me that she's very religious, immediately, if I had a dick and that's all I thought about, then I would wonder, oh, is she that religious?
Okay.
So I'm just saying, I think that it's just a gross way of hiding a question that he actually wants to ask, which is like, how much can we make out? And do I have to wait till like a fifth date or an engagement? Or how about tonight?
I disagree with that. I don't think he was asking that in a way if he could sleep with me. I don't think the religiosity has to be so tied to like your virginity. I think that might have been true maybe like when you're dating in your like early 20s, but by the time you're in your 30s, like I don't think that's really connected. I think it's more like when you're dating in your 30s, it's really about like how much do you match with someone. So it's not giving him enough credit. I can't believe I'm saying that. But yes, like I don't think it's giving him enough credit as a grown-up. Like I will give him that.
Maybe I'm channeling my mother.
Zara, I saw your awkward Ask Muslim on Instagram.
Yeah, that's right.
You were
right.
Like eating pizza and you had all these kids looking at you like you were ridiculous.
Okay, I'm going to tell a little story about this picture. I was eating a pepperoni pizza with the MSA of Dartmouth.
Yeah.
They were not partaking. That is not what I was told would happen when I ordered and ate it.
Wait, so you all went to get pizza? Did you get like one like really large pepperoni pizza? Is that what happened?
So I'm hanging out with the MSA after the 10 o'clock show. And they're like, do you want to order pepperoni? Like, it's no big deal. And I was like, okay. Like, are you guys cool with that? Like, and then they were like, I don't know. And they all kind of just like looked away. And I was like, well, I guess we could split it if you want. And then they were like, no, you know, actually, I'm not hungry. And then I was like, okay, you guys don't actually want pepperoni. You just want to see me eat pepperoni.
So did you do it?
Well, then one of the dudes was like, no, actually, I'll have it with you. And then when the woman came, like, he wouldn't order it. He waited for me to order it because, like, that would be on him, right? He can't order a pepperoni pizza. That would go in his, like, bad deed book. So then I end up ordering it. And then there's, like, three slices of pepperoni. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I, like, don't want to eat this at all. But there was an awesome photo opportunity because they all looked so horrified. And they were like, oh my God, are you really going to eat it? And they were like, holy crap, it's true. Like, we didn't believe that you actually ate pepperoni. Like, we listened to the podcast and like read the articles and we were like, no way. She's just saying that.
So basically what you're saying is that an awkward Ask a Muslim can be asked by other Muslims. This might be our first awkward Ask a Muslim done by an actual Muslim.
It totally gave me acid reflux.
Of course it did.
Awkward.
Let's fatwa.
Okay, I have a fatwa to declare.
Declare it.
I declare fatwa on uncles and aunties that gossip about you behind your back.
Oh, that's, yeah.
That is not cool. I was getting angry text messages from my dad about something that some uncle had said that someone else had told him that was up on my Facebook. And then it came back to my dad and it was not true because that is how the auntie uncle rumor mill works. But I still had to like calm my dad down and convince him that like I didn't have what he thought was on Facebook up on Facebook. So fatwa on rumoring uncle and aunties, because y'all should not be talking about these kids who aren't kids anymore. We're like adults. Have you had an experience like that, Zara?
Is the stipulation that a rumor is not true?
Yeah.
Then no.
Really?
The shit they say about me is true.
You know, honestly, like, that's one of the things I was thinking about. I was like, there's so many actual things about me on the internet that people could talk about me that you don't need to make up lies. Like, if you really want to talk about rumors, just, like, you know, there's actual stuff on the internet to find. So I, you know, fatwa on uncles and aunties that tell rumors, I'm making my Facebook private, man. What's your fatwa, Zara?
Yeah, I mean, that's messed up. That's your family.
I know.
I feel like that's a bigger fatwa than the one I had against the NRA.
I agree with your fatwa. I do think we need a fatwa with the NRA.
What's the NRA done?
Well, I mean, there's been so many school shootings, right?
What did President Obama say? I have been here every weekend since my second term giving these speeches about gun violence. My God. Oregon just happened.
Like, Obama's speech was so moving in this one because you could just see how mad he was. And it's like, he can't take a stand because the stupid NRA lobby is, like, tied up the hands of all of the politicians to not take a stand. And it's just so ridiculous how this is still happening.
Which goes to like make me so annoyed about how people like Ben Carson and other Republican candidates and other talking heads will act as though they're saying something courageous by defending the right to bear arms.
Yeah.
Like, it's not at stake. Except for Muslims. Muslims are not allowed to have guns in some states. In Alabama, recently, they refused to sell
oh, Florida,
guns
wasn't
to
it?
Muslims.
It was in Florida?
Was it Florida?
Yeah, it's probably Florida. Hey, speaking of fatwas, guess what I found in my shower this morning?
What?
A spider.
Did God come down with a lightning bolt and strike it?
No, I drowned it.
Oh, ooh. You know that doesn't actually kill them.
It got them out of my bathtub area and down the drain. That's fine.
Girl, it's going to crawl up the drain, arachnophobia
style. Stop it. Stop. Please. Mm. Please.
Fox News can't fatwa, but we can.
All right. On that note, I think we're near the end of our show. Zara, what do you have coming up?
I am performing at Litquake, San Francisco's cool. event. Litquake was put together by Jane Goodall and Jack Boulware. It is the largest literary festival in the world.
I'm so sad I can't be there.
Yeah, there's going to be a Litquake in LA too, though.
Oh, cool. I'll try to go to that one.
I'm performing October 17th. And I've got my next column of My Infidel Husband coming out. You can catch it on the loveinshallah.com page or go to my website where there'll be a link. You can also sign up for my newsletter if you're like me and you're lazy and you like people to just like send you stuff to do in your inbox.
I'll be performing a couple of poetry sets at the National Equity Summit hosted by Policy Link in Los Angeles on October 28th and 29th. So if you're going to be there, please stop by. I'll be social media-ing where I'll be performing. I'm also going to have some pieces up in an art show that's coming up called Sharia Revoiced. Documenting American Muslims' experiences of Islamic law. I'm very excited about that. I'm going to have like a few pieces that I'm going to create based on the terrible Islamophobic hate posters that have been hanging off of the freeways. So I'm going to be making some art pieces out of that, and that's going to be at the show. It's an invite-only show, so if you are in Los Angeles and you want to come to that on October 24th, hit me up on our info line at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. And finally, I have one more thing coming up. On November 6th, I will be hosting a book talk with Tanwi Nandina Islam, who has a book that just came out called Bright Lines. She's going on tour. She's a dope Bangladeshi-American writer. So in Los Angeles, I'll be hosting the book talk on November 6th, but you can catch her on her book tour all across the country. Probably just Google her for more information. And of course, I also have my Radical Love column, which is on the Love Inshallah site. Check it out. Is that it, Zara?
Is it ever it, Taz?
I think that's it. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening. Like
Bye,
us on
dudes.
Like us on iTunes.
Subscribe.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zara at Zara Nu. That's ZAHRANOO. You can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Yeah, there was a lot, but I didn't realize you were going to make me do homework.
You know, it's the job of every Muslim to be ready to educate at all times.
Yeah, I know.
So you need to keep your 5-star notebook with you.